Well, that was a little bit of a shame. I'm sorry about that. It's somehow leapt a spot. So we had a Telstra commercial, which is not happening, and we have your new, message from, I think, from you guys. So that was going to play today.
So we've missed it.
We will put that in later in the show. So in the meantime,
so welcome to the age stage.
Welcome to the age stage. Awfully sorry about that. These things happen in shows like this. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Brody. And how are you?
All the better for trying to get this under control.
Oh, well, you seem to be making it
easy job, don't we?
I just sit here and watch you, you know, fiddle with
buttons
and slides and all of that sort of thing. But we've got a great show lined up today. We have Peter Nielsen and Tom Camp with us,
yes.
So two of our amigos,
yep.
With us to talk about living on the pension in a village.
Well, that's our theme for the month,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, yeah. The pension and finances, et cetera, for
it
this month.
It can't be easy. I think you've got to be creative, haven't you?
I think so. Mm. So hopefully today we'll be able to have some tips and tricks, et cetera. We have Stuart McIntosh, who's a financial advisor from Core Wealth Creations in Somerville, and he's coming into the studio to discuss the pension and how to navigate some of the tricky areas and ensure people are receiving the maximum benefits whilst they're on the pension, what types of pensions there are, what people can do if there's an error with their payment, and also talking to us about the rules of gifting.
So gifting?
Gifting? I'm not too sure myself, so we'll find out when we speak with Stuart. And we also have a special guest of our producer, Lisa, and they'll be joining us via phone, and this is Di Wyatt. And she retired a number of years ago and spends much of her time travelling, which sounds very nice, with her husband, Maury, and they travel here and abroad. And she's going to share some of their travel experiences, but also some tips on how to plan or where to plan your next holiday as well.
Make it work.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, if you live on a pension, you still want to be able to get a little trip.
Well, you do.
Save
you
up
do.
For it.
So hopefully she can give us a few tips on how they've been able to manage that as part of their lifestyle being retired.
Well, wonderful. Well, in the meantime, of course, we need our walk-in music.
We do. We need a little help from our friends.
We do.
Welcome, Peter Nielsen and Tom Camp.
How are you guys?
Yeah. Really good.
Good.
Really
good.
Good
morning, Vicky. And Brody.
It well, is a good morning.
He did have the order correct, though. Thanks, Peter. Yes.
Now, what are we on to today?
Well, today we are going to be talking about living on the pension, but actually we wanted to have a little chat with Tom about how to sort of manage what I would call a catastrophe in some situations.
A catastrophe?
Yeah, I would call it a catastrophe. Right. I don't know what our listeners would call it.
Okay.
And this was a situation that happened very recently for Tom.
Can
and
your
his...
village manager manage a catastrophe
yes.
like this?
Of course we can.
Well, I think it shows what sort of calibre a village manager has to be in organisation and probably stress management.
So,
as well.
What's the story?
So, I think, Tom, you start the story. I was gobsmacked by it.
Gobsmacked, yeah. Well, I had the privilege of walking my daughter up the aisle last Saturday, and it was pretty cool from about the start of the wedding onwards. But it was what happened preceding that was just pretty amazing. It was in the city, and we had the actual ceremony on the Melbourne Town Hall balcony.
Beautiful.
Which is fantastic. And we stayed at the amazing Langham Hotel and some of the apartments around because we had a lot of guests coming in from interstate and overseas. So it was pretty cool. Anyway, we heard some fire engines around about 10 o'clock on the Friday night. So this is only about 6 or 7 hours before the girl
the
that does all the hair
starts.
And the makeup girls all arrived and everything like that. And it turned out that a sprinkler had broken in my daughter's room.
OMG.
Oh,
yes,
gosh.
Well, there was probably a lot more expletives than that, I can tell you, Brody. But
and tears, I would imagine.
Oh, tears. So it was pretty horrific in lots of different ways. It was about 4 inches of water everywhere. And
all through
but
the room.
Worst thing was the wedding dress was absolutely destroyed.
Oh, no.
And so by the time we sat down with management and worked out everything and tried to find 24-hour dry cleaners to do what needed to be done. It was
and especially a wedding dress.
A wedding dress. So it was, let's just say at about 2:30 in the morning, it was 50-50. So we all decided to take a breath and come back at 8 o'clock the next day. So fortunately, all the other plans carried on, the makeups and the... Mate, it's quite cool to watch, actually. You know, like I've never been in an environment like that before. But anyway, the deal at 20 to 9, dress is no good.
Oh.
So we were really fortunate. Langham took us all down to, or took me and my daughter down to Raphael's and High Street Road. They were just awesome.
Fantastic.
And we went through an array of dresses and found an absolutely awesome one. I should be able to tell you the brand. It was one of those sort of spectacular ones. And they were able to fit her, get it organised. I got her back to the hotel to finish her makeup. The Langham crew brought back the dress. She was on, and she was only 8 minutes late.
Wow.
When we walked down the aisle. So once we sort of hit it, it was pretty amazing. But talk about I actually said because I took some from the wise sage Peter Nelson next door, who's done Father of the Bride speeches so often. You would have been very proud of me, Pete. I talked about that nothing is worth nothing of value that's attained does not have with itself some adversary and disappointments.
Oh.
And when I was talking and encouraging the bridal party about how they encourage the groom and bride and stuff, I'm saying, so the key in all of this to learn, guys, is that you've got bigger capacity now to handle anything in the future. You know, it's character building.
Yes.
You know how to respond appropriately and the right attitude. And the biggest thing is you'll always win if you never quit. And look what we've gotten today. And so at the end of the day, that was my claim to fame, mate. I got roaring applause for that sort of stuff.
Well done.
The other thing, of course, is they're going to have the best speech opener for their entire lives.
Yes, about their wedding.
Let me just tell you what adversity is like.
And so there you go. So we went from, you know, from pretty discouraging to obviously
having an amazing day.
An amazing day. And it was, as the father of bride, because I've only got one daughter, it was just amazing the euphoria that you get when you walk out and just everybody goes, you know, like it wasn't even about me, but here I am going.
Oh. Why am I not surprised you nailed it, though, really?
Isn't he a cool guy? Mate, he rings me on a Monday morning. I'm pumped for the week, I tell you.
This is not a love fest, I'm afraid, no.
I think I need Peter to call me every Monday morning too, just so I can get through the week.
No, it's really good.
Well, there you go.
Great.
If you're looking for a village, check their credentials. Yes. They're like it's solving, yes,
solving
matters
problems
under duress.
Under pressure and very tight time frame.
Where have they gone for their honeymoon?
They've actually gone to Bali.
Oh, nice.
Which is, I was really surprised actually, because they had some other options, but I think they're going to Seminyak.
So all we need is the volcano to go off, and then that'll have a complete story to tell.
Brody, we will not receive that at all.
No, we're not even putting it out there, Brody.
Oh, no, the good part of it is that we've got grandson for the next 4 or 5 days.
Oh,
that's pretty cool, man.
Oh, that's
how old is he?
I wait till I show you the pictures, Vic. He just looked a wee honey. He's 3.
Oh, gorgeous. Was he the ring bearer?
No, he probably slept through most of it.
Oh, but, okay. So it was a big day for him too, though.
Huge day. Yeah.
At 3.
But he actually ran up and jumped into my arms when I was walking Karen up the aisle.
Oh,
so that was pretty
beautiful.
Lovely. So that was gold.
You couldn't write that, could you?
No, oh, mate.
That's beautiful.
I should go and sell it to Women's Weekly or something like that.
I don't think they could afford it.
Bit of cost recovery on the new wedding dress, I reckon. That's what it is.
That is a good story, Tom.
Yeah, it is.
Mm. Peter, have you walked a maiden down the aisle other than your own bride?
Done it twice. Well, one more next year.
One more to go.
Three.
Wow. Mm. 3 daughters.
And she bought her wedding dress, which I paid for last Friday.
Yeah, I've done that.
And
it's when they come up 5 days. Well, the really good thing, though, Peter, is when they come to you 4 days before the wedding and say, oh, Dad, we're sort of $5,000 short. Could you help promise to pay you back, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's great. I like it. You're just having this be my first and only.
It is a good
it's
day.
It's just a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Well, I think I have huge admiration for both of you, because I'm afraid that if I'd explained what I did for my daughter's wedding, you would be absolutely ashamed.
Oh, really? I want to know.
Well, I have a very strict approach to this. If somebody, and it's got nothing to do with anyone else, it's all about me, this is. If you want that, then that's enough for you to get a deposit on a house. You know, you either have one or the other. I don't care, but you can have one or the other. But you're never going to get both. So work it out. You know. And I think I would take the house. You know, if all is said. So she said, and the children have always understood it. That's why two of them aren't married. I think. but my eldest said no. She said no. I get that. Dad, that's fine. That's super. Thanks very much. So she went and organised it herself. And the job that she did with almost nothing was absolutely extraordinary. And afterwards I said, well, my daughter only paid 4 and 9 pence for her wedding. What? But we've gone broke. You know, we've had to sell the house and to sell the cat. And I said, well, no, it didn't happen in our family. And it was lovely. It didn't last very long, unfortunately, but it was a good day. And you're absolutely right. That moment when you walk down the, whatever it is you're walking down.
It's unreal, isn't it?
Yeah. So when you, and it is a very poignant moment. You do, as a father, it is that time when you think, you know, that my little girl, it's,
yeah,
you know, it's special.
Yeah,
no. It is special.
And then, of course, you get to the other end of the spectrum when you've done all of that and you've had life's full journey and you've lived all through the panics and you've managed your lifestyle and you've dealt with all the horrors of the world and now...
Where's this going, Tom?
At long last...
It's a wonderful segue, isn't it?
You get into the age stage.
Oh, the age stage. Yes. I love it.
When you have to survive, potentially, on a pension. So here's the question. Is it really, really possible to enjoy the amenities of a village on the pension you get from the government?
And the short answer is yes.
Yes, absolutely.
So you could actually potentially kick up your lifestyle and benefits in terms of community values, in terms of help.
Absolutely.
You needn't stay at home.
No.
Right.
And I think that question has two parts to it. The people who choose to live with us, clearly all of their lives have been saving for their retirement, paying off their home. So they have the capital to move into the village. The issue for most of them is the ongoing readies to stay in the village.
Correct.
Like 87% of the people who live at the village, Glen, are pensioners.
Right.
Yep.
And that's a high stat, isn't it? 87%.
It is. And that's just the government pension. That's got nothing to do with...
Either that or... the reason I know that is because the monthly service fee at the village pays for our resident rates.
Correct.
So to get pension concession on your rates, you've got to be a pensioner.
Yes.
So we know that stat because 87% of them get the concession.
Right.
So the bulk of them are pensioners.
Yep.
And I learned a long time ago, and I told Tom this a long time ago, is the issue for our industry really is not what do the units cost and the capital cost of coming in, or what does it cost me when I leave because of the deferred management fee. The issue for most people is this is a lifestyle that I aspire to, but can I afford it on a week-to-week basis?
Yes. Right,
that ongoing.
That ongoing. And there are a lot of people who really fret about the answer to that question and therefore don't move. And there are a lot of people who live in homes that are expensive homes, poorly maintained because they can't maintain them.
Yes. Correct.
And not living what I would call a quality life. Mm. They're managing. They're just managing.
No.
Whereas if they make the decision to move to a village, provided the village is aware of what I've just said, and those of us who know what we're doing are, we spend an inordinate amount of time making sure the monthly service fee stays affordable.
Correct.
Right. And do you actually work with the individual?
All that in perspective.
To explain that?
The village, Glen, we know it's a large village with wonderful like golf courses, pools, anything you think you need, it's probably there. Mm-hmm. Our residents pay of their pension 23% to live there.
Wow.
Now, there's a bit of a rule of thumb in social planning.
Correct.
That says that if you spend more than 30% of your income, no matter what it is, on a mortgage or on rent or on accommodation, it starts to affect your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher that number gets, the less you've got to do the other things you need to do. So you can quickly see that the 23% is well less than 30%. Mm. So our residents do enjoy a high quality lifestyle. Now, I'm sure there are some people, it wouldn't matter what they earned, there's never left anything left at the end of the pay period.
Right.
But that's not the bulk of our people. Mm-hmm. The bulk of them have been through a depression, been through a world war, and they fully understand that they've got to stand on their own two feet. So they're not looking for handouts.
No.
What they're looking for is value for money.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Basically.
I think it's the baby boomers that are going to have the biggest problem, because people of my age were 40-ish before we were told that we needed to start to save money, and therefore a lot of them didn't. Mm-hmm. And they're going, but they don't have the wisdom of all the savings learnings that they had with the Depression or during the war or during the 50s.
Yeah, Brody, we are known as the me generation. Mm. The me generation.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it's all about me.
Yeah.
And therefore people wasted opportunity.
And they don't, but at least there's a very good chance that they may have had a home which they've sold, which gets them in, and there may be a little bit of fat in that kitty.
Yeah.
But we've had this conversation before. They have to get used to the idea that when it comes to the final moment of departure and there's no more, that leaving something to your children is something that you should not be ashamed of not achieving. Because it's just going to be a commercial reality of life in that time.
And government policy is pushing all of us that way.
Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely.
No doubt.
To support ourselves right till the end.
I think that Pete's Village, the Village Glen anyway, has been now coming, you must be 35, 37
40
years
old.
40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of the principles that particularly the earlier villages were developed on was very much based around a First World War and Depression baby and their value system.
Mm-hmm.
They pay cash for everything. That's why I remember when I was a kid growing up, I could never figure out why people lived in sort of bedsitters with a carport, but it was only because that's what you could afford, that's what you paid for, and that's what you did.
You didn't borrow money.
And that, of course, has all changed. And what you've alluded to, Brody, is right on the money. The value system is changing of how people do life. I'm already seeing it. There's an age group there sort of tilting in that late 60s that sort of, particularly if they've been married twice, they sort of want it now. They really can't afford it while they're doing personal exertion income, and earning money. They can maintain a lifestyle. But what do they do when the personal exertion no longer stops? And it does come back to pensions.
And that's the main reason why we introduced September 2 years ago what we call our Contract B, which is a no service fee contract.
Yeah.
So what does that entail, Peter?
It entails that people pay the same price for the villa, but at the back end, when it's time to leave, they don't get as much from that process. But they never pay a service fee. So the company who owns the village on behalf of them pay the trust for their monthly payments.
Oh, right.
And that means every dollar of what their income is theirs and for their lifestyle.
Now, is that unique to you, or is that a common practice?
That is unique in Australia.
Oh, is it?
Really? Any other village that does that.
Wow.
Pete and I do unique things because... No, seriously, what you've got to do is... can I go one step further? I actually think since GFC, the world changed. It really did.
Yes.
Whether it was
the global financial crisis
of 1987, 88... 1997, 98, no, 2000.
2000.
Pete, correct me on this, will you? We've had one every sort of 10 years, haven't we?
Mm.
No, but the latest GFC, the global financial crisis that occurred 2008 and 2009 and the effects of that actually changed, in my opinion, the psyche of people. Mm. And before that, everybody had the idea, build up, got this home, got all the equity in it. We're going to downsize, so we'll sell the home, pay whatever money we need to new digs, accommodation, and then there's some left over, which then I can utilise for lifestyle, for spending, travel, the things that we've been talking about. But I reckon it changed. Post-GFC, everybody got really nervous.
Yes.
The family, the wealth was quite substantially eroded, and particularly for older Australians going, gee, where is my money or my wealth safe? all of a sudden, because of the devaluation of property, and I saw it significantly in regional Victoria, where, you know, some of the stuff coming off in my areas were sort of 20%. People thought their houses were worth this, and the reality is they were 20-25% less. You know, particularly places like Metung, retirement capital of East Gippsland.
But a wonderful
they
place.
Thought that a beautiful place, but people's $900,000, you know, they couldn't even get 500 for them. You know? So what I wanted to say was, all of a sudden, we became very conscious that the family home now became an important part of the financial planning of making sure that people had the lifestyle that they really needed, that they could afford, as Peter's indicated, out of the service fees to live in the village, but also package up their capital so they had access to capital, which could then begin to offset pension incomes. And even this year, we've seen some changes in the way, we'll hear about later, the pensions
Stuart
are done.
Stuart will tell us about that.
Tell us about that. So we're trying to be innovative about making sure people have a peace of mind. There's no point in them, as Pete said, coming and being able to afford to come, but then can't afford to live there.
Yes.
That's just stress and anxiety, and that's the antithesis, really, of what a retirement village is all about, because that'll kill people, basically, their worry and anxiety. So we're trying to actually remove that. So my point is that I think that we as an industry are moving towards creating these types of product in order to make affordable options to people, not only at a capital level coming in, but also the service fees. And I absolutely adhere to what Pete said. You know, if we can keep costs down, we have embedded networks, you know, shared infrastructure on technology and so on, and that often runs at a profit, and that those funds can then go in and subsidise the service fund, which either gives more money in the fund to provide services or is able to rebate or annually reduce the cost of your service fee. And you're running 23%, are you? Yeah, well, anecdotally for us, we're about 25.5%.
That's still a good number.
And we're and if you think of a single pension as about 22 grand, isn't it?
22,
You know, so if you're around that sort of money, 4.5-5 grand, you know,
that's
you've
not
got
bad.
That's not bad. That's, you can actually live and have a life. And
when you consider the monthly fee covers rates, insurances, house and contents, all external maintenance, it lets them play golf for nothing, swim in the pool, all the things that you,
all those facilities,
in the general
that's
community
actually,
you pay to be a member of clubs.
I can't live like that at home.
No, but that's exactly right. And when
I've got just the place for you.
He's coming down. He's coming down to Gippsland.
I thought that's where that was leading.
I thought I might have one in each. I think a pied a terre, one in the country, one in the city.
Well, can I just say it's not as silly as it sounds? You know, like I believe this is retirement euphoria. Or is it euphoria? What's utopia? Sorry, is the day will come when people will arrive with everything they've got and they'll say, "Tell me where I can live. I want to live 6 months in Queensland. I want to live 6 months in Victoria, do matura duty with the kids. How much can you give me?
Right.
Here's everything. Look after me. That's it." And that, in my opinion, is we're nowhere near there yet.
But that's where you see it leading to.
There's a responsibility that we can actually do. The resources are there with the right planning to be able to do it.
I've thought for some time that how good would it be, you know, if under that scenario, maybe 4 or 5 units of the village Glen were owned by the community, and we did a deal with a retirement village on the Gold Coast, and 4 or 5 units were owned by that community, and then people just swapped.
It was like a share,
like time share.
But they don't want to come here in the winter, and we don't want to go there in the summer.
No, that's not true.
Isn't it?
No, absolutely not. You got to remember, there's a lot of people that go to Queensland, they've still got family down here.
And they need to come back for a wedding.
For a wedding at the Langham.
Well, I can understand individuals house swapping. That makes sense. You know, like, because you can do that in any case. I'm rather like the sort of Uber of
Airbnb for retirement village.
Can I just because Pete was able to pitch in his no fee you got contract
1 minute
B contract 1 minute. What we do, because this is what I want to say, most of the people I deal with in Gippsland, their average wealth, they're wonderful people in the community, their average house is worth about 300 grand, and they've got 600 to 700 at the most to rub between themselves. So to come and pay 400, 500, 350 for a villa under a deferred management fee contract is
not
going to happen. So what we do is we give them essentially lifetime tenure for 164 grand up front, and an ongoing monthly fee that's slightly higher than normal, subsidised by rental assistance, $3,500 a year, and I can still keep it down to about $150-$160 a week. So it's not bad. And they've got access to their capital, and they live in fantastic new villas double garages.
Right. Sorry. Commercial over.
That was a commercial. Sorry about that.
I think you slipped that
it's the regional one alternative. Under the regional alternative.
Gentlemen, it's super to see you. Thank
it's
you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you in.
It's genius to hear your story. I think that was just, that only proves, you know, dads are really good things when they really know how to get down and fix stuff. And as for your, that little idea of yours, I'm going to have a discussion with that more to see when you come up with these ideas, can other people roll them out for other villages? That does make sense.
You just need to find a village that has the same culture as your village. Because they're not all the same.
I'm
sure it's achievable.
It's also looking for a retirement village to ask these types of questions as well.
All right, gentlemen, it's lovely to see you. Thank you very much. Now take a word from our sponsors, which I think maybe even one of these could belong to one of you two. I'm not terribly sure. We'll find out.
And welcome back to the Age Stage. And we'd like to welcome to the studio Stuart McIntosh.
Thanks, Vicky. Nice to be here.
Hello, Stuart.
Hello, how are you, Brady?
Are you well?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well.
We have a financier amongst us.
Yeah, Stuart's from Core Wealth Creations in Somerville, and he's come today to speak to us about living on the pension and what sort of pensions and managing the money and pension.
I should give a general advice disclaimer first.
Yes, no, we have to do that.
Not taking on in people's individual circumstances. So what we cover is very general in nature today.
Yep.
And we'll try and, I guess, simplify it largely and try and use round figures. Otherwise, it gets incredibly complex.
Sure.
That's all good, Stuart.
Great.
So can you just explain to us exactly what the pension is? People may already understand, but some people might want clarity around what we actually class as a pension.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And we'll focus on the age stuff because there's obviously a lot of new starts and other benefits.
Yeah,
definitely. But I guess we view the pension as a safety net, and that's a bit tough for the baby boomer generation because they weren't forced to save like we are today. But it's a safety net. It's an income payment that is made fortnightly to older Australians. It's there's two main departments within the government that look after pension entitlements. One's Department of Veteran Affairs and one's Centrelink. And largely the calculation is the same. The only difference is DVA deal with ex-service personnel and there are some other benefits they may or may not get from disability components.
Right.
Isn't that starting to get a bit out of date? We've still got soldiers, but we don't have a quarter of our population going off to war like we did on the first war.
It is interesting. I'm an ex-serviceman myself with operational experience. So there are a lot of us out there, and between Afghanistan, Iraq, East Timor, and the various peacekeeping operations.
Yes.
But you're right, it's not the millions of people. And over time, maybe it'll merge, maybe it won't. But I think there are some key differences in the disabilities that you may get from defence service and the way they're dealt with. Centrelink won't pay you twice, whereas the DVA recognises that some people do need to be paid twice because they were broken in their service. So it's a complex thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows where the future will take us? But
yes.
It's not a pretty picture, these age pensions or the service pensions. They're not a lot of money. They're just above the breadline.
Right.
And they are a safety net.
So is it one flat amount per year if you're a single or a couple pension, or does it depend on other aspects
It depends on a lot of things.
Right.
Really, you have to get to a point where you're at the right age. You have to be a resident for tax purposes.
Age 65 or is it?
It used to be. It's creeping up. So it used to be 60.
What's it now?
It's now, if you're born, I don't think of the year that was, it was 1948. If you're born in 48, it's 65. Then if you're born up until 1957, it's a sliding scale. The newer or younger people at 67.
Right.
So, and I imagine that will continue to age as our aging population.
Yes. That will increase.
It'll increase, exactly. But it's like, in answer to your question there, it's around what home ownership status you have.
Yes.
So if you're a homeowner, you can have less things. If you're a non-homeowner, you can have more things. And then your marital status, so whether you're single or a couple, then it gets complex, because if you then get separated for illness, it changes again.
Oh, okay.
So someone has to go into an aged care facility. They may be entitled to the full Centrelink pension for a single person, as will the remaining spouse. So it's...
Right.
Yeah, it's quite complex.
Okay.
But the general rates for a single person, and I'll talk weeks because it kind of mm-hmm. I understand. So the bread line is $400 a week for a single person,
right.
But the Centrelink age pension is only $440. That's okay. Slightly above, but it's not a lot of money. No. But on that, you can also have money. So this is not necessarily the only income you can have. You can mm-hmm. have $250,000 in the bank before you then start losing some of that entitlement. So
right.
it gets complex for the marital status and then assets test and income test. So we'll cover off that a bit later, I think.
And that's independent of your house ownership too, isn't it?
It is. So yeah. The principal residence is still exempt and probably will stay that way.
Right. And it doesn't matter, as you're saying, totally exempt. It doesn't matter what value is on that principal.
So the only things that are exempt are that principal residence and any fixtures and fittings. So contents aren't, and everything else that we might have in our lives, boats, cars, all that stuff is assessed
for the pension. Yes.
As part and part of your asset base.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. And that's $250,000, is it?
That's where it becomes that, are you single or you couple, you're a homeowner or not a homeowner.
Right.
So I guess for a simple example, a couple homeowner, they can have $375,000 worth of financial assets. And then for every $1,000 over that, they lose $3 of the pension. So they can actually have up to $816,000. So there's a big window for assets where you start to lose the pension incrementally.
Right.
And you can't suddenly give that away, can you?
No, definitely not. Well, no, that's not true. The Centrelink or DVA say you can give away what you like, but they only allow you to give away a certain amount each year, and that's $10,000 per financial year. Up to $30,000 over 5 years. So it becomes very tricky.
Is that just as in cash or dollar value?
Dollar
value. It could be an item, like you said, a car, a boat, or whatever as well.
So you can. Right. Someone might decide to give away their $20,000 boat.
Yes.
So $10,000 is allowable, but the other $10,000 isn't. So that would remain on your, what we call a gift register, for 5 years. Yeah, so it's a question we might cover off in more detail. Because we have different methods we might use to optimise the pension as well as we go forward.
I'm just going to butt in here and say, you know what, I'm not surprised that the when they're clawing back the money for people that they're saying they've been overpaid or something, if you can't tick the box as a process, it is just insane to expect everyone to understand. I fully get what you're trying to simplify it for our listeners, right? But let's just, which is taking it, and even what you're saying is that it's not as easy as that. Well, it'd like to be, but it's not as easy as that.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the part that's terrifying. So you're actually terrifying an awful lot of senior people out there that are saying, whatever you do, before you wipe your bottom, go down to Centrelink and see whether it's permissible or whether they're going to take some money away from you. Unfortunately, you have to do that.
Yeah. And we have a lot of people who, for whatever reason, will be overpaid. And that's not a sin either. There's no black book. It's a self-reporting system. And if we get it wrong, then they just want the money back. So Centrelink.
Right. So how often would they assess it to know if they've overpaid it? Is that on an annual basis or something?
It's actually a 6-monthly basis rolling at the moment. And that's because DVA and Centrelink now have greater access to see what retirees have. So if you're on an entitlement, there's almost a tacit approval for them to be able to look into your bank accounts, for example.
Oh, okay. Right.
And it's people making small mistakes. And this is where I completely agree with what you're saying, Brody. You have to kind of know what you're doing as a senior person on an age pension. So if you, we often get people downsizing, so they sell their $1 million house and mm-hmm. they put the money in the bank and then they go and have a look for a new place. Of course, then when Social Security will see that.
They'll see
$1 million. Now, there are some exemptions around it, but if you don't flag it and ask for those exemptions, then they'll turn your pension off for you. Thank you very much. And then... But you might not. There's a million ways that people can get it wrong.
So is it best to go, as Brody mentioned, totally. To go to Centrelink and sort of sit there, or is it better to go to someone such as yourself
A lot of people don't need advisors.
Right.
It might be very complex for Social Security, and that it would be nice to have an advisor, but it's just muddling through. So the policy is simple. Just keep it open with Centrelink.
Right.
You don't talk the same language, so just tell them what you think.
Yes.
And don't go on the internet, because these people can't, a lot of them can't navigate around the sites, and they don't know what to ask, or they're too scared, and so they just end up sitting in a corner sucking their thumb, and someone's going to say, give us $100,000 back. It's just ludicrous. I feel for all of those folk that have been caught in this ridiculous net.
Yeah, and it's often people right on the border of whether they should or shouldn't have a pension.
Yeah.
But I think it's very important to make sure you keep on top of what Centrelink do for you.
That's right.
If you go in and say, my wife's now earning $90,000, you've got to check the paperwork that comes back to you.
Yes.
Because they may not have, and we've had that exact example where she was, he was retired, he was getting almost the full Centrelink entitlement. So they had told about the $90,000 income, but they hadn't recorded it at Centrelink. Now it's your obligation
to make sure
it's correct.
Centrelink have done it.
So you're right, you have to know you have to research these and you have to understand how the system works.
Well, yeah. So go and see them.
Yeah. And we do a lot of aged care work as well, and it took us 2 years as advisors to really master the art of aged care. Because trying to interpret the Aged Care Act, trying to understand Social Security Act to actually make sense of it. So advice
to then
is good.
Be able to utilize it and
but
assist
also
people.
For those people who don't have or can't have or don't want an advisor, Centrelink is very good, and they also have FIS officers. Don't ask them what FIS stands for.
Oh, okay, that was
a financial advisor essentially within the organisation,
right?
Centrelink, and
they're someone that you can sit down with and go through your particular situation with.
Yeah, and whilst they can't give full structured advice like an advisor, they can explain to you your different options.
Right.
Yes. That's what you need. And it's got to come from their mouth. Stuart, it's been fantastic to have you here. I'm going to ask, this is probably not terribly fair, would you come back sometime again this month?
Oh, I'd love to.
Would that be possible?
Would it be
because I think this month is about living on the pension. I think we've got a lot of questions to ask. I think you've got a lot of story to tell. And I would like to be able to take that further, if you would grace us with a bit more of your time.
Yeah, no, I'd be delighted to come back.
Fantastic. That would be super. Well, we'll just have to have a word with our quiet producer and see whether she can schedule
that. Arrange that for us. But we do appreciate you coming in, Stuart, today and enlightening us and our listeners. So it would be great to have you back in again sometime.
Great. Thanks, Vicky.
Good to see
you. Brady.
Take care.
And you're still with the Age Stage. And we have on the phone with us Di Wyatt. Hello, Di.
Hello, Vicky.
How are you today?
Very well, thank you, on this beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day, isn't it? Now, I understand you are a friend of our producer, the lovely Lisa Gray.
I am, yes. I've been a friend for a long time.
Oh, well, that's lovely. And she's saying that she's been enthralled with your holiday destination. I have a feeling I'm going to be really jealous, actually, in this conversation. So we just wanted to talk to you about some of the best places you've visited, to give our listeners some good ideas and hopefully inspire them to pack their bags and go on a holiday.
Sure.
But firstly, so what did you used to do when you were working? Because you're now retired. And
I am retired. I have been a business consultant for a number of years. I had my own business. And I did enjoy it because that meant I could work with a lot of different people and community groups.
All right.
And I have been retired for a number of years, but people keep bobbing their heads up, new projects keep coming up, and I think, oh, well, that wouldn't be too bad to get involved in. So it's really hard to
so you're retired,
back,
but
like
people can still ask you things.
Yes, that's right.
Well, you better tell Centrelink.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Well, we've just been having that conversation about financial management.
Yes.
Oh, I should have been listening. I probably need some hints.
Now, since you've been retired, what are some of the places that you've travelled to, far and exotic or even close by?
Well, we have done quite a bit of travel. We've always loved to travel, and we've done a lot of Australia. We've done an extended trip around Australia, which was the first one after I finished work. We did that for about 6 months. So that was just lovely. And we went to Nullarbor and Kakadu and Horizontal Falls and the Kimberley. It was just gorgeous. We really don't know what it's like up there until you go and see it for yourself.
Was that caravanning? Or?
Yes, it was, yes.
Right.
That's right.
We've
joined the Grey Nomads. That's us, yes.
I would imagine that, that's quite a social aspect of the travel as well.
It certainly is, and if you haven't got any friends when you leave that you're travelling with, you certainly will have by the time you get home.
Oh, that's good. And do you prefer the caravanning or camping, or do you do a mix?
We have done a lot of that, but we also have done some cruises too, and I get quite excited when we go on a cruise. That's a beautiful way to see a lot of the world as well.
Oh, it is.
You would have met quite a lot of people living on the pension, I would have thought, travelling around Australia in the grey nomad space.
Well, I expect so, but that's something that we just don't generally talk about. There's so many other interesting things to talk about and look at and see and do. That's a minor detail.
Well, yes.
You don't bring enough over a cup of tea. So are you on the pension?
Are you in Poverty Street?
That's right.
Oh,
and you can usually tell by the size of their caravan.
Oh,
they get better.
I see. Yes, look at mine. My sides open up to yours.
It's all about size.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Do you use Airbnb at all?
No, I never have. Although we're going to Amsterdam in a few months' time. And I've actually booked in for our first Airbnb, so that's going to be
That's a great experience for you.
Yes, I hope so. Mm.
It's always interesting when you realise you're staying actually just in someone's home.
That's right, yes.
And they usually still have all their little bits and pieces around.
Yes, bits and pieces around.
Oh. Mm.
Well, our fearless producer, they've got Airbnb. They booked in for Brighton, and I said, sorry? This is their first big trip overseas, their first real big trip.
Yeah.
And I said, where are you going to? And she said, we're going to England. I said, lovely, where are you going to? She said, going to Brighton. I said, what?
Brighton.
Why Brighton?
What's wrong with Brighton?
Well, nothing. You had the whole of England to be able to select from. Brighton.
It's lovely. It's a very different beach
at Brighton.
It's like
saying, I've come to Australia week. Why? I want to go to Geelong.
I'm sure there are people that do want to go to Geelong.
Lisa's Airbnb being, so I think somebody just lost a booking. I think it was a horrible thing. Anyway, so good luck with that when you do that.
Thank you.
When you've cruised, do you find that cruising gives you good value in terms of the whole experience for a holiday?
Yes, but it comes as a bit of a shock. When you actually buy the cruise, you think, that's very good. You get all your accommodation and all your meals, and you don't have to unpack every night, and it's quite exciting. But then you come to, let's do a little shore excursion, and that's going to cost you X amount of hundreds, and the next day there's another one, and the next day there's another one. So if you do things like that every day, it becomes quite expensive. But that's an option. You don't have to do them.
Because you can do your own activities, etc.
Yes, you can just walk off the boat just go and do your own thing, can't you?
And the only place that you can't do that, the only place that I know of, is St. Petersburg, which we are going to in a few months, and you're not allowed off the ship unless you have some sort of visa or unless you're in the hands of a tour operator.
Or go to a gulag.
Or Komodo Island, you have to be part of an organised tour as well.
Okay.
Komodo Island.
Well, that's because
of
the dragons there.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah. We did that last year. So.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear about that, about St. Petersburg, because it's a place I've always wanted to go and see, particularly in the winter. I've got a sort of Dr. Zhivago fetish.
Oh, I just
look at Julie Christie and think, oh.
Yeah. Whereas I'd look at Omar Sharif.
Yes, I know.
Well, look, you probably can, but you need to get a visa, a separate visa.
Uh-huh.
Right, right.
And where are some of the really outrageous places you've been?
Oh, I don't know about outrageous, but we did go to India late last year, and not saying that's outrageous, but that's the one that's mostly in my mind at the moment. And we were just blown away with the different colours there.
Oh, colours, how wonderful.
The women's saris and the jewellery and the paintings on the houses, it was just amazing, the different colours.
How wonderful. Mm. Because we're probably a little bit bland in comparison then.
Absolutely.
Especially with house colours.
Yeah.
You don't usually see colourful homes here.
Yeah.
And I can imagine some of the food whilst you're travelling.
Oh, yes.
Are you an adventurous...
We are, yes, we are. But having said that, after we came back from India, we didn't want to see another curry for a while. But it's good to try all the different things.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We're very excited there. we went to a couple of years ago. We were in Canada and we did the Inside Passage, and we did some excellent shore excursions on that. And we went on a little boat and we went out and caught some the snow crabs. Mm-hmm. And we brought them back to a little restaurant and we cooked them and ate them, and that was fantastic.
Oh, how wonderful.
Very nice experience.
And so what was it? A snow crab?
Yep.
I've never heard of a snow crab. Mm. Have you, Brody?
No.
No. Oh, well, when you said yes to it, I thought you must have known what it is. So does it look like a normal crab?
Yes, but they're not like a mud crab, for instance. Their mud crabs are very chunky.
Oh, I like a good mud crab.
These are soft shell, aren't they?
No, they were hard shell, but they had very long claws.
Oh, right.
Oh, like a spider crab?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Now I know.
Yes, oh, well, it seems like you've done quite a lot of travel.
So how do you pack up your home? Do you put someone in it when you go walk about?
No, we're very fortunate. We have a daughter that lives just around the corner, so she pops in every other day and does the mail and checks that place hasn't burnt down.
Oh, that's always good.
Our neighbour is very helpful too.
Right.
Mm. But you would recommend someone keeping an eye out on your home whilst you're away?
You know, if only just be a garden that's a giveaway when the lawns aren't done and the mail starts to accumulate at the front there.
Yes.
So that's a real giveaway that there's no one there. But even if the dustbins aren't out, people are watching it. So.
Now, if you were going to have a bucket list, what would be on that bucket list in terms of travel?
If I had a bucket list, I would probably want to do Machu Picchu, which we haven't done. And also Antarctica.
Oh, wow.
Mm. Right. Well, Antarctica is getting more and more accessible.
It is, and affordable too.
Yes.
Up to now, I understand it's been a frightful price. Probably we haven't looked at it seriously because of that reason.
I don't think, yes, I know that they've got the ability to land jets on the ice and things there now. Mm. I don't think I'd like to go down there in a boat. I think going through the Roaring Forties, Roaring Fifties.
It's quite a big trip, isn't it?
It's a big trip and it's very stormy and howling down there.
Oh, you've just put me off then.
fly over,
I think, sounds a little bit more appealing.
Shake hands with a penguin and get out of there.
Yeah.
Some of the cities that you've been to, what is your most favourite international city?
I'm not a big city person, to tell you the truth. I find all cities are very similar. I'd much rather be out in a national park and having a look at the scenery than be in a city.
Right. So when you get to, I don't know, London, you'd get off, if you were, no, in Holland or something, you'd get out into the country.
Absolutely, yes, and to the little villages and to the seaside and have a look at, you know, the fishing villages, things like that. That's what I like to do. I'm a very keen photographer, so I'm into all that sort of thing, all the scenery things.
What do you think, if you imagine a friend of yours was on the pension, what would you recommend that they consider in terms of a vacation?
I have a friend that's just about to book on a trip to Darwin, which is very reasonably priced. It includes their airfare and all their accommodation and all their meals.
Right.
And I think that would be an excellent way for people to start that haven't moved around much out of Victoria to see if they like that sort of thing. The particular one that they've booked is takes them to a lot of different places in Darwin too. Like they go out to Kakadu and do the Yellow Waters cruise, and they go to the Kimberley and have a look at that area. So,
and is that via an organised tour group?
Yes,
sort
it
of
is.
Thing?
Yep.
Oh. Well. Di, it's been fantastic for you to join us.
And yes, I am
so
jealous, Di, of the travel that you've done and where you're going to.
My mission is complete.
We've got you between trips, I guess.
Yes. The next one is in May. We're going to we're actually going to St. Petersburg on that particular trip up the Baltic.
Wonderful.
We might have to ring you and get you to broadcast to us.
Let us know what it's like.
That'd be fun.
Sounds magic. Sounds magic. Thank you so much, Di,
You're
for your
welcome.
Time today. We
Take
appreciate
care.
It.
Thank
bye.
You. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yes. Another show down. It was a very good show.
Wasn't that a great story about the wedding?
Oh, look, I really felt for Tom's daughter. The stress level. So next week, we're talking about big ticket items and pensioner benefits and what to look for, as well as in heating and cooling and how people can best manage their utility costs. So probably some tips on what to do in summer and winter.
Let's hope we can get Stuart back.
Yes.
He was great value.
He was. Sensational. Very good.
Just well, down to Lisa. She's fantastic.
She is. Oh, we love our producer, just putting it out there.
Well, thanks, you have Brody. A great show. All right, thanks for
have
that.
Have a good week.
Take care.
Bye.